Ron Campbell, it's great to be talking with you.
It's a pleasure to be here, Julia.
How in the art world are you these days?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm in the art world exactly. I'm really, really retired, but I do paintings and do shows of my paintings, yeah.
I think that you possibly will never retire from the world that you live in. I hope not, at least. And we're so delighted you're headed our way. Now, where did your passion for cartoon and especially animation all begin?
It actually began when I was about 7 years old. And like all children, I watched characters like a cat chasing a mouse and the mouse always winning with great delight. I thought they were real animals. And when I explained it all to my great-grandmother, she said, "No, no, Ronnie, they're just drawings." And when I learnt they were just drawings, the immediate thought I had was, you mean I can do drawings that can come alive? That was the beginning of my passion.
What a thrill. And animation was a really exciting field as you were a young artist getting into all of that. How did that add fuel to your creative fire or just give you the avenue to get there, maybe I should ask?
Well, yeah, first I had to go to art school. You know, I took that passion with me all through my childhood, climbing all over stacks of library walls looking for books on animation, of which there were a precious few.
Mm-hmm.
But I came out of art school, and as luck would happen, I was just at the generation in Australia where it was possible for the first time to actually earn a living doing animation because television had just arrived and there was a demand suddenly for animated television commercials. 5 years earlier, and I probably would be doing something totally different with my life.
Oh my goodness, yeah, timing would be everything in your case.
Yeah, timing was everything. Yeah. So I was able to walk around the streets of Sydney pretending I knew how to make television commercials in animation. And by doing, learning. That's how it began for me.
You're in the late 40s and into the 50s by then. TV was just taking the world by crazy, and so was cartooning and all. So was kids' television. You grew your profession right along with kids' television. Is that a fair way
to say it? Yes, that's also. I wasn't filled with a passion to go and work for a company like Disney's making wonderful feature films. I was born in a television age, and of necessity, I learned very quickly how to animate for television, which was a completely different technique than working for the big screen. It was simpler. It was less what we call pencil mileage. Fewer drawings to get the idea across. And so I became sort of specializing in that. As a result, I found myself animating Popeye and Crazy Cat. Very, very early cartoons for children for American television, which led to my being asked by Al Brodax of King Features if I would direct the episodes they were planning to produce in Australia of a new show they had got. I said to Al, "What's the show?" He said, "It's the Beatles." Mm-hmm. And I immediately misunderstood and said, "Insects make terrible characters for children's programs." And he said, "No, no, not Beatles. Beatles. The Beatles." And we made about half the show, and it had a tremendous rating. It had like a 67 share sometimes, which is out of every 100 TV sets turned on in America at that moment, 67 of them were tuned into the Beatles television show. So that was the rocket that took off my career.
A rocket is a really good way to describe it. And,
yeah.
And did you ever dream back then that it could grow as big as it has?
No, we didn't. As a matter of fact, from the business point of view, children's television was a very uncertain business. Nobody knew if it would ever pay off. And as a result, money was very tight and always in short supply. It wasn't until time went by and proved itself financially that more money became available and production values gradually increased throughout my entire career, actually. Every 5 or 10 years later, it was detectably richer.
In those early days, was it easy to adjust to the international work connections that you built? Because you were in Australia, but a lot of these people you were working with were in America.
Well, pretty soon I started getting job offers in America. And when I was like 26 years old, my wife and I packed our bags and our little girl, and we crossed the Pacific to go to the center of animation industry in the world, which was right there in Hollywood and Hanna-Barbera, and Disney, too. I arrived a few weeks before Walt himself died and started work for the first year I was in America with Bill Hanna and Joe Barbera.
Life in the fast lane and life with all of the big boys, and I'm sure they were happy to have you. it does seem that you animated it all. Did you live that dream?
Well, you know, remember I mentioned I was climbing all over the bookshelves in the libraries in Melbourne and Sydney, and I was reading about Walt Disney and Bill Hanna and Joe Barbera, and they seemed like distant gods. And then I found myself 26 years old working for them, and I thought that was a great thrill. But shortly afterwards, I started my own studio, and that grew because I was always independent. Learning how to be independent when I walked around Sydney pretending I knew how to make cartoon television commercials, you know.
What was it like opening up your own studio in the ranks of the big
very
boys?
Small. Yeah. My studio consisted of a desk and a typewriter and a drawing board and hustling around trying to get work, you know.
It
led to my own television show called The Big Blue Marble, which I did all the animation for.
It's still talked about, yes.
Ended up with a lot of employees. So I was animating particularly when I was young, but then as I got older, I found myself working with a lot of people. And then subsequent to that, I spent a lot of time writing scripts and doing storyboards.
Do you enjoy that part of it too?
All of it. Okay. I never woke up in the morning and said, darn, I've got to go to work. No, I never did. I loved it.
Good
50 years in 1 month, actually. So.
Amazing. And it shows also. Is there a moment or a memory that's just going to be forever in your heart?
There were shows that we knew were impossible not to be loved by everybody, like Scooby-Doo, for example, the Smurfs, the Rugrats, Ed, and Eddie was the last show I worked on. And you can't ask a 25-year-old man, did he watch Ed, and Eddie? And if he did he love it? And, you know, all you get is a gigantic grin. You know,
so you out your watchers, that's to be sure. You bring up a great point because cartoons are timeless and perennial. We get all of that. As an animator, did you feel like you were animating for every age, shape, and size as it was coming out?
Well, the only way I can describe that is that was what I did for my pleasure, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's only since I've been retired and doing paintings and watching the reaction of people when they come in and look at my show, you know? The audience was once just numbers on a page. How did we do last Saturday? What were our ratings on so-and-so? And now in my old age, I'm actually meeting the audience face-to-face all over the country, and I had no idea the power that memory is for people. The major emotion people have when they come in and see the cartoon paintings that I do is a nostalgia that overtakes people sometimes to the point where they even start crying. I think it's because no matter what kind of childhood you had, let's say you had a terrible, unhappy childhood, some of your happiest memories from that unhappy childhood was rushing down the stairs to the TV and sitting down and watching cartoon shows made just for you. And you carry that happiness with you for the rest of your life, subconsciously or just at the back of the mind. Or if you had a happy childhood, the same experience. You came rushing down those stairs and turned on the children's television shows that were made just for you. And you have enormously happy memories from that also. That really is incredible to me that while I was and everybody working with me were just enjoying ourselves, we had that kind of an effect on so many people. Memories that they take with them all through for the rest of their lives.
Aren't you glad that you got those feelings in the latter, in
the
this half
way
of your...
actually. I recommend it to all film cartoonists. Hey, now that you're retired, do some paintings and spread a little joy.
And do these characters remain their classic selves when they come out in the still form, or do you keep them pumped up and fresh? How does that work?
No, it's the memory that keeps them alive. And the way I draw them, I have to draw them in a different way than the way you would draw them as an animator.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm doing paintings, after all, not making cartoon films. I'm doing cartoon paintings. So I draw them slightly differently than the way they look on screen, but everybody recognizes them as to who they are. Because paintings don't have light emanating from them, photons of light zooming out. So they're flat, and I have to use very vivid colors, as vivid as I can, intense, vivid, bright colors. So when you come in to see the show, you sometimes have to put sunglasses on. They're so bright.
So that'll be fine. That'll be just fine. Now, I am kind of curious, do you have any favorite non-Campbell characters on the animation or cartoon scene?
Well, some of the older cartoons I adored, you know. You could ask me to draw Bugs Bunny, but I won't because I didn't work on Bugs Bunny. But do I have favorite characters that other people have been doing? Yeah, like Chuck Jones's stuff, the Coyote and Roadrunner, the Warner Brothers pieces, and of course all the marvelous Disney films, Dumbo and Pinocchio, and even some of the new computer-generated things, which I would have no interest in being involved with in the slightest bit, even if they did ask me, which they wouldn't.
You are a hand animator, I get that one, but
yeah.
You survived the coming and going of computer-generated versus hand animation, and then back again and forth again. But yeah, what do you think of the world of computer-generated animation after I make you swear you're never, ever going to try to do it yourself, Ron?
Well, computers can do things that no human being could ever hope to be able to do. I must say, though, hand-drawn animation always comes out in a way that no computer would ever, ever hope to emulate.
It does balance out well that way, yeah. And I like the way you describe it. You have a delightful sense of humor that is apparent and very endearing, as a matter of fact, Ron. So how essential do you think that is to being an animator? Could somebody with virtually no sense of humor be a good animator?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. It's hard to find somebody with no sense of humor. As a matter of fact, I would find that tremendously depressing.
Maybe a topic for a cartoon of your own, I get that.
Yeah. Seems to me everybody has a sense of humor, it's just our sense of humor varies. You know, English humor is very different to Jewish humor is very different to Italian humor, you know.
Those are good points. Now, from an animator's standpoint, do you expect you could probably animate any given variety of humor that we're talking about there, Ron?
Oh yes. Again, because films are teamwork things. And the scriptwriter will bring in Italian kind of humor or English kind of humor, and you animate to it. Like, I did so much animation on The Yellow Submarine, for example, which is a very English film. And then at the same time, I was animating on George of the Jungle, which is a very American kind of humor, in the same year, I was doing storyboards on Scooby-Doo, which also was absolutely guaranteed to charm every child that ever lived.
Indeed.
Your animators don't have a problem changing from one style to another style to another style.
What about jumping from character to character, as you say, in a busy year?
All.
It's just like talking to a person and then another person.
Everybody
and another
gets, all animators get model sheets how to draw the character that they're supposed to be animating. And if you can't follow a model sheet, you can't be an animator, really.
Okay, you got started in the business early, and I'm glad you did. You helped push it along and keep it always successful. What do you think of all of the people, you know, your peers that have helped you push it all forward? You know, what kind of feeling is that to be part of that movement?
I think of the parties I went to. You know, you put a whole bunch of animators and animation people in a room, and if you're not in the animation business, you are nobody. You're just sitting there in the back listening to everybody yapping away about the business, you know. I never knew anybody in the animation business that I could actively say I didn't like. And one of the sad things about being 80 years old is that so many of those people are no longer with you, and you remember all of them.
That's a sad point, except their work lives on, and they do live through their work.
Yes.
The lucky people that way too, and of course we are lucky to have them, but good for you. I'm so happy that you were at the right place at the right time, and you've stayed right in that hot spot all these years. So, okay, Ron, last question before I do let you go. You have shared these animated friends of yours with all of us for over 50 years now, and I am speaking for the world when I do thank you for that. Meanwhile, what do you get from all of this?
If I confine the thought to the work that I do, I guess on the final roundup, I can just say, hey, it's been great. You know, I don't know. Personally, it's been great. It's been my life from the earliest memories right to the last moment.
And you're keeping it up. And we just can't wait till you bring it right here to Fort Wayne. We're looking forward to your shows at the Rhapsody Art Gallery. And so I will thank you for sharing your delightful story with us today, Ron, and wish you safe travels, happy trails. Keep that pen in your hand and carry the gift.
So kind of you. Really, it is. Thank you very much.
That was an arts and culture interview by WBOI's Julia Meek. You can find more of Julia's arts-driven reporting at WBOI.org and on the WBOI Facebook page.